Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
And welcome to the podcast, Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name is Tom.
And this is the podcast where we talk about movies, levels. Damn it.
Oh, dear.
I've been warming up all day.
Okay.
Red leather, yellow leather. Love it or hate it, we debate it.
Do you know any other tongue twisters besides that?
Red lorry, yellow lorry.
What does that help with? Because surely the red...
Lorry.
Unique New York. Unique New York.
You know you need unique... Okay, what are we doing? We're talking about Once Were Warriors.
Feels like we're avoiding something.
You a bit nervous?
I don't know if nervous is the right word. I think this is going to be quite an episode.
1994. New Zealand film. Mm-hmm. MA 15 plus is surprising.
Yes.
Thought it would
is
have been...
Is it Frank?
Thought it would have been R, honestly.
Directed by Lee Tamahori.
Yes.
Yeah.
Starring Rena Owen and Tamara Morrison.
Yes.
It's kind of...
Cliff Curtis. Not Cliff Curtis. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Cliff Curtis.
Curtis in a very early role. This is my... Sorry, I know we're jumping very far ahead.
Go on.
Didn't realize he was New Zealand, like, or Kiwi.
Really?
I've seen him in so many American films. And I read an interview with him recently where he talks about that, like, people of color obviously have difficulty in Hollywood, but he's been very lucky because he's like, I'm just like an equal opportunity ethnic guy. Like, I could be in 10,000 BC, I can be in Training Day, I can be in Blow as Pablo Escobar. You need someone who looks foreign or ethnic, I'm that guy. And I'm like, yeah, he kind of has that niche and he's great. I love it when he shows up in things.
He just slots in.
Yeah, he's in.
Speaking of slotting in, we rate films out of 11 normally.
We do.
Why, Tom?
My 11 gimmick that I do every week.
Yep.
Just doing something funny.
Yep.
And like
funny
lighthearted.
And lighthearted.
Yep. Drag it out further.
Pass for this movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
Pass. Hard pass.
I finished this movie 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And walked in to record. I'm still shaking. Like,
that's a rough way to start a recording day, Frank.
Yeah, thanks.
I think this was a film that when I suggested it, I thought you would have time to watch, process, think about, and you've just gone...
No, I think I want to do it raw, like a fucking exposed nerve and I'm just here tingling. Yeah. Okay. I don't have any time, pal. Also, thanks for suggesting this movie. Wow.
Sorry.
So, Tom, no 11? We normally rate films out of 11.
I guess we could all try say 11 fine. In a Kiwi accent.
11.
Or we don't have to. No. I'm not very good at...
Now I'll try.
I'm not very good at New Zealand accents. Can you?
Oh, no, I don't want to fail.
The very obvious one that we grew up with was fish and chips.
11. 11.
That's not bad.
11?
I don't know.
I'll keep saying it until it sounds 11. Right, I think.
The only sentence I can say, because I've watched this movie a lot and it's the funniest sentence in the movie, is in Hunt for the Wilder People, where Ricky Baker ends up in that dude's house. He's like, oh my God, Ricky Baker. Oh, I can't believe you're in my house. Like,
that's a bit shaky.
But that
you sound almost
that's
British.
That's the only way to sort of try and sell it is if you do it in that
Taika Waititi,
that
dialect,
higher octave sort of Maori accent.
Oh, hey, bro.
Oh, hey, bro.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So shout your name if you like this film, bro.
Tom,
Marcus,
Frank.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so upsetting. But gee, it's a good film. Gee, it's affecting.
It's incredibly effective.
We spoke recently about Raging Bull and emotionality and like such the dark side of humanity and exposing that and exploring that. And like that has no payoff or reward or anything for the audience, you know, in my opinion. This film has such a, I don't want to say reward because that's not the right word.
It has catharsis.
Yeah. You feel
somewhat
like rewarded for going through the journey. And that last scene, we'll talk about it later, but you're very... Ooh.
I think if I can quote
you're
Tom,
relieved.
Hoo boy.
I did.
Hoo boy is right.
I watched this yesterday and I sent a group text to you guys saying, just watch Once Were Warriors. Hoo boy.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's a very effective film. It's the second film in the last few weeks that we've looked at when you say Raging Bull about a very angry man named Jake who hits a lot of people.
Yep.
This is,
yep.
It's well, part of that canon.
Yeah.
So.
And all the Jakes I know, I guess.
Yeah.
So, so I
numbers? Numbers. Scores,
oh, numbers,
scores.
We should. I'm so sorry.
Please.
9.4.
Okay, well, I wasn't ready.
Get the fuck out of town. I'm a 9.4 as well.
Really?
That's nice.
That is
That's
nice.
The nicest thing that's going to happen in this episode.
I'll be a 6.7.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm curious with you, Frank, when it comes to scoring, because you always do this little shrug. You're like, I'm gonna do, and it's like you think of it in real time. Do you ever actually write down your scores?
No, I don't write down anything.
Okay.
I don't actually know how to write or read, no, as we know.
He knows how to wrong. He's really good at that.
I can turn left.
So back on what I was saying, I picked this film initially because I am in this mode at the moment where I'm really wanting to share some films with you two that I know you haven't seen, for example, and that I feel are either very culturally impactful or impactful to me in my life at some capacity.
So you had seen this before?
Yeah. Yeah.
On average,
honestly, probably once a year.
Wow.
I watch it a lot.
You'll sit through it once a year.
Is that 100% true?
Yeah.
Oh, right. You're not doing the bit.
I've never made those stats up.
Marcus, you say it about every movie, though. So
yeah, because I rewatch a lot of films.
There's 365 days a year.
That's true.
Sometimes 366.
You watch films every day of the year.
Yeah, but I almost always... Well, I'm bad at rewatching movies these days. Anyway, I had no idea you watched.
You've already seen Sinners twice.
That's true. Good movie.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Marcus, in case they haven't seen
it. How many times would you say around about ballpark you've seen this?
I first watched it when I was 13. So
wow.
I've watched...
So 40 times. Because you're 50.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I might have taken a gap year. Like,
of course. Yeah. To go to Europe.
Try out. Really, like, find himself.
I would be surprised if I got through an entire 365 and hadn't rewatched it.
I had no idea. This is a very meaningful film for you.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that because...
I honestly think it's in my top, I'm going to say, I'll be generous, top 15 films of all time.
Wow. Awesome.
But it's only I guess it's the same as what you gave American Beauty. So, Tom, you obviously, Tom had a very visceral reaction and was, I guess, hesitant almost to do this record. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, there's a lot going on in this film.
Why did you ask the question like that?
What did you think about
that? Let's push him in, see if he can swim.
Do you work for Vanity Fair? What are we doing right now?
I'll be pretty unfair.
I think that this film is like a bit of a perfect storm of a lot of things that we especially aren't particularly equipped to talk about. But I am very heartened to hear you say, Marcus, that like it's a film you have a very long-standing affection for. Maybe affection's the wrong word. Well, it's a film you really enjoy.
I would say affection.
Yeah, and you've seen it a lot. It is obviously a film about the Māori people, which, by the way, they even say it in this movie, Māori, but like...
Yeah, Māori, but Māori.
Yeah, Māori sort of is the more, and I'm not even getting it right there, but...
We're Australian.
The direction I've been given is to say Māori, like Māori bread.
Interesting, but it's kind of like the R is like you roll it a bit. Yeah.
Māori. Apologies in advance.
This is kind of part of my thing. It's like three white guys in a room talking about it. So how do you pronounce Māori?
And also...
At least a few people right now are like, Jesus Christ. Anyway.
I think as mature adults, I think we can discuss heavy content for what it is.
Absolutely.
And I think as long as we're respectful of the way we are.
I mean, mature adults?
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm trying for aspiration. He's like, I'm hoping you guys. But I do think it's that aspect of it. Like, it's obviously Islander culture.
Mm-hmm.
It is... I mean, we did Blonde way back in the day. We're getting close to like 2 years since we covered Blonde.
Yeah, really early.
And I think we came into that episode and we were like, so this movie, pretty intense. And I would argue there is no movie I can think of that we've covered outside of that. And maybe Raging Bull, but I don't think Raging Bull
not
is
not
like,
the same way.
No, it's not as prolonged. The assaults in this movie on women and the mayhem through which they live and are accosted by the men around them is like harrowing, is skin crawling and so claustrophobic at certain points. You're like, this is in many ways one of the most tragic films and one of the most angering films I've ever seen. Like, it incites you to rage.
There's also...
This can happen.
Yeah. And it feels so based in reality. Like, it's obviously, it's based off a book. So you just feel like there's this... I don't know, lived quality in everyone who's in the scenes and who's directing it and who's behind it and the creative team. It's like everything feels like they've seen that, they've actually done that, or they have some visceral experience that relates to this. It is so intertwined, like what you said, Tom, about how upsetting it is. It's also intertwined with such joy and such strength of character from the women in this film.
It's true.
it's like really uplifting, and yet all you want to do is say, why, just walk away, which is obviously every domestic abuse conversation is, why didn't you just leave them? Leave him, usually. But like that's just like, oh, like that's not how it works in an actual situation, and so hard to leave when you're in these situations. And
it's a very just good film at addressing that, the complexity of that. There's a number of scenes as to why this, you know, whether it's recent books that have come out like Look What You Made Me Do, which explore domestic violence in Australia, mm-hmm. and the issues of how interconnected and how pressured women can feel to stay in a relationship and the fear that leaving will be more dangerous. Yeah. And of course, there's a huge part of that here. But yeah, sorry, Marcus.
No. This really goes to showcase just how good of a job Tamara Morrison did in this as well. Because he gives, and what I've written about this film is, it, to me, this whole film is about two sides of a coin. You know, there's the flip side to everything. You know, you've got Tamara Morrison as Jake the Mus.
Yeah.
I think it might be Tim O'Hara. I could be wrong, but I like, I'm not in 100%.
We can fact check
sure.
that. I always thought it was Tamara, so I don't.
Yeah, I think it's like an extra syllable in there somewhere. But anyway, sure. Go on.
He lends such a charm to his character that you can see why at a point you're like, I can see why you're going back, but please stop.
And this is the movie does such a great job. The first 10 minutes he's yeah. so likable and joyful. Yeah. Comes in with the seafood and it's like, oh, this guy, he's like providing. He's gotten back from wherever, he's providing, he's caring. Yeah. He's fun.
Yeah.
He's obviously, he loves his wife passionately.
Yeah.
Turns like that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Scary.
And a lot of the film does explore that two sides of a coin mentality of, you know, you see Rena Owen as the protective mother. She's got this hard exterior, this shell that she has, but on the inside, she's damaged and broken and soft and just wants to be nurtured and loved. Mm. And you never get that. And then you get the son, the eldest son's, is it Zig?
Have I got no, that it's right? His name is Nig.
Nig, who he effectively goes and decides to break away from the family and join a gang. But yeah. you see the gang, you know, his initiation into the gang being beaten and beaten and beaten. And yet, this brotherhood that he's now formed with these guys, they would die for him. They would kill for him.
And he chooses that over family.
Yeah. And that's the two sides to that coin as well. You know, every character has these you know.
Duality.
It's duality, of course. And it's really, and just, I mean, I just want to go back on Rena Owens, man. She is,
I think,
so powerful.
I think
in this
film is one of the best performances I've ever seen from her. Like, and I think Morrison's really good as Jake. Like, yep, that's yep. There's an iconography there that is because of the depravity of
yeah,
the man
sure.
and mm. how able he is to be charismatic and yet monstrous. Her performance is like elemental. There is something about her in this film that like shook me in so many scenes. Yeah. I just kept being like, I'm physically like having a reaction to watching her. I've never seen her in anything else. She's apparently in Star Wars Episode 2 and I think Episode 3 is a different character, and there's some credits to her, but I've never seen her in anything else.
Frank can pull up the
yeah. She
there,
looks
yeah.
remarkably similar. You guys know Kelly, friend of the pod, who's my mate. She looks very similar to his mum.
Oh,
and
really?
So I'm watching this movie and I just kept kind of thinking, like, that, so similar to my mate's mum. Like,
that in itself invokes
yes.
some emotion.
Yeah.
She's got 71 credits. She's done a lot of TV. Yeah, she's in Star Wars.
A lot of television, but I just don't think she had the career she should have had from this, which obviously...
In terms of talent, no.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
There is some, like, there are a few scenes, obviously, but the one that landed for me where I gasped and said, oh, no, out loud, was when she found the journal.
Yeah.
This film does such a good job of, like, you're going through it, right? And there's, I mean, spoilers, right? There's the scene where Grace is assaulted.
We haven't really done a, like, should we quickly do a plot?
I was going to ask, has there been any sort of synopsis yet?
Yeah.
For those?
And, yeah, it's a sort of plotless movie in a very big way.
Well,
it's just
one of the biggest criticisms.
It's a story of a family, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a family descended from Māori warriors is... Oh God, Bedvelid, Tom.
I'm sorry, I can't see what you've got written there.
Oh, Frank.
Should we just try and give a synopsis off the top of our heads?
Sure,
because
yeah.
I can't read.
It's a family living in New Zealand. Yeah, descendant from. It's a Māori family.
Bedeviled.
And oh, I assumed, holy shit, no, we need to take this moment. I assumed it was a Maori word that you didn't know how to pronounce. And I was like, no, I'm not going to know
it. No,
it was English. Bedevil.
It's English.
It's all the way over there.
Bedevla. Oh, it's good we can laugh.
We have to. To relieve the stress.
Yes.
Okay, bedeviled by a violent father and the societal problems of being treated as outcasts.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is basically, you've got
Jake
four kids. You've got Jake the dad. Yep. You've got...
There's heavy social themes here. There's cultural themes. You are effectively as a viewer, and again, the criticism of this film is that there's not much of a story. You're literally just seeing a day in the life of a family within reason, right?
Yeah.
Other than people maybe wanting to better themselves or better the situation or to move forward in life, you don't get a lot else than that. So you do feel as a viewer, you are a fly on the wall watching this family.
Yeah, it's not like a call to action or a hero's journey or any sort of story circle BS. No. It's just, this is what happens. Yeah. This is what happens in real life.
It's very poignantly rendered. Like, it is just, you feel the domestic sort of strangeness and vicissitudes that they experience from these parties, these wild, like, bacchanals that they have that then lead into drunken, fucking skin crawling.
And it feels so raw and grounded.
Very abrupt.
And lived in.
And things happen quickly. And then it like smash cut to the next morning, they're cleaning up. And then like each scene at the dinner table was so rewarding for me. It's like she pulls out the loaf of bread and just dumps the white bread on the table. And like just little things, you're like, that's how people live.
Yeah.
Like it was, here's the gravy for the roast and she's just happy to provide for her family at that point. Like
Grace and Boogie listening when they all come back and Morrison and Owen are singing.
Oh, yes.
And she says... And that's it.
To the nice part.
I love it when they're like this, you know. And that by itself, that early in the film, you're like, is this just going to be kind of like a sweet, tender drive? Like, I truly didn't know what this movie was about. So I was like, the title is very ominous.
Yeah.
And Jake has demonstrated a capacity for anger and violence, but it really kicks off from there. The thing about Jake that, as you guys were saying, is he's very charismatic. He's very appealing. Mm. The opening of the film makes him seem like kind of a avuncular parental figure. But then he does yell. He does lose it at, her name's Becky or Beth, Rena Owens' character.
It's Beth, yeah.
Beth. He does yell at her when she gets upset at him for losing his job. And the scene that's kind of the key to the movie in retrospect is when he goes to the pub with his mates and the woman gets up to sing. And there's the dickhead who puts the jukebox on.
Yep.
And Jake goes and beats him up. And that's your hero moment where you're like, yeah, he stands up for this woman. Mm. He beats up this guy. He's respectful. Like, he's got his head on straight. And, of course, everything that follows after that is like, it doesn't matter who's in his way. It doesn't matter. He will exercise that violence on anyone.
Mm. Yeah, it just happened to be for a just cause.
That was the one context where that becomes a heroic act.
Yeah,
but that's,
which is it's a red herring almost.
100%.
Yeah. Because the thing is, I don't know if it comes from now knowing him as Django Fett, etc. You're like, oh, I like this guy, right? Yeah. You like him and he's got a likable face and he's
great voice.
Oh my gosh.
And singing voice.
Oh my
gosh. No, he could sing. He's got a wonderful singing voice.
Outside of playing Jake the Mus, and when he was in New Zealand, he was doing, I think it was TV, he's playing a nice character.
Yeah, like he's like...
I think he's in a hospital or something and he's just a nice dude. Yeah. And so this was tough for him because he has to come in, play Jake the Mus, put on a bunch of size because he's not a naturally big dude. Mm-hmm. And then after the film and continue doing this series back to Mr. Nice Guy. He said he found that was the biggest challenge, was switching back and turning off Jake. And he would walk around New Zealand or anywhere effectively, and if he was recognised, people are picking fights with him.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Because he does it so well. There's such a reality to him.
He's terrifying. He's one of the scariest people I've ever seen.
But also there's a strange feeling in this film. It's what, 1994? I don't know if it's the style of the dialogue or the style of the acting. Like, you obviously have some elite actors and then you have some, let's say, learning to act. First couple of films, maybe they didn't take it as their whole career.
I would argue that Rena is basically the anchor point for everyone.
Beth, the mother.
Correct.
Yep.
To work off of. And then you do start to see some weaker links in the chain.
Yeah.
But instead of looking at it as these actors look inexperienced or not up to scratch, I look at it as they feel real.
This is what I was going to say. I don't think it's a detriment to the film.
Not at all.
They are sort of, I mean, their line readings are a little bit, you know, oh, that's not what you'd expect. A little, not wooden, but sort of slower. Like there's a slow pace to everything and things are really drawn out.
A bit of an awkwardness to it as well.
Which is what teenagers are like. But so it feels.
And the young kid as well, like I really liked it. And I was thinking, like halfway through, I was like, is that bad or is it working for me? Like it was I was juggling it in my head.
I think the best example of it is the kid, the friend who lives in the car under the bridge.
I think his name's Toot in it.
Because he Toot.
Toot would, on paper, he's not the strongest in the cast. I think, in fact, I'd say probably the weakest. But
really?
Well, in my opinion, I found that at times his, and it's more of a camera technique and everything like that, you could see when he's either thinking of the line or he's looking, his eye line's really off a lot of the film.
And there's one scene where they're smoking the joint together.
And
he's like doing the stoned laugh and you're like, are you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
There was that moment.
It feels very forced at times and it is uncomfortable, but it sells.
In the context of the whole thing, I don't think it's not a detriment.
It always worked for me. And I know what you guys mean, that there's a stilted quality to some unpracticed actors who come in and don't have that.
It's a technique thing. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's literally, you can tell.
And it captures something that's a little bit more raw and a little bit more spontaneous that I find really compelling. I think the actress who plays Grace, and I have to apologize, her name is very confused. It's like Mama Ngoran, like her first name and her last name is Kirby.
Go for it, Frank. Read it.
No. I think Tom is pretty close.
I apologize. It's a very long Māori name, but she is fantastic.
She breaks
my heart continually in the film. There's a quality to her that came through, obviously. She came with a friend to read. It's got a very like Mel Gibson-esque sort of backstory to it, where she came with a friend to read for the movie. And the casting agents were like, do you want to read? Like you? And they were just like, there was something about this girl that was like a timeless old soul. And when she smiles in this film, it like radiates out of the picture.
Yeah, I agree.
When she is like, what she goes through fucks me up. More than almost, it's hard to think of other characters that have a more trying ordeal that is more affecting in a film than what she endures.
Yeah, and so
she's so good.
There's such a believable darkness and sadness to it, like which is such a horrible thing to say because she's an actress who has 5 credits.
She's not done enough. She's like a real estate agent now, I think, up in Cairns. But she's like,
she's done enough.
Done,
you know what I mean?
Like fantastic
that's,
job.
If that's what you've done, that's incredible.
You know who is playing the older son, by the way, playing Nig?
I know he's a director now in New Zealand.
That's APOC, The Matrix.
Oh, and of course he did continue acting. I don't know if he acts anymore now.
His name's
Julian Arahanga.
Yes.
So Arahanga. Great.
And it's, the second scene he was in, I was like, God damn, that guy's familiar. And I looked him up, I'm like, oh, it's APOC.
Frank, can I say, and this is a really niche reference, but do you know who he looks like in this in particular? He is spitting
I know
image
you're
to
gonna,
me.
You?
No.
In your opinion.
Spitting image to me.
I know who.
Say it. You've got to say
Christ. What have you said?
He looks like Scott Stapp from Screed. Scott.
The cover band.
Screed.
These is my Screed.
Where they scat all the songs.
Yeah. Scoot-a-boop-a-doop-boop.
Who do you think he looks like,
Mark? Johnny Diesel, Mark Lazotte.
Oh.
I can see that. It blows my mind.
His name's right on the tip of my tongue.
I know the Lazottes.
Look at that smug face.
Who doesn't?
I know who you're talking about.
He's a very famous man.
Yeah.
Now this might be a bit on the nose, but obviously she's called Grace,
the cutest line in the movie. Are you about to do it?
No.
We should say Grace.
She is Grace. We should say Grace. That is a very cute line.
Oh, I love
it. And he just goes, Grace. And you're expecting it to be.
And they pause.
And then the mum just, Beth just laughs.
You think they're going to cry. And they laugh. And
God,
you're like, that's so
what I mean.
Heartwarming.
It's intertwined with all this joy and beauty. God, it's good.
Obviously, there's two ways to grieve. And they're just using this moment, thank God, to celebrate her.
Well, they've had so much like crying and grief and the funeral scene. Okay, did we do it? Oh, sorry, we have to talk about Grace's journey.
Grace, the name Grace obviously is another way of saying hope, and I think that she's the only thing in this film that gives any sort of hope at one point. She's the hope for the family, hope for the future, and ultimately destroyed, and that's the most crushing thing in this film is that their one and only hope is destroyed.
She's their storyteller as well.
Yeah.
And this idea, there's so much lineage in the Māori people and so much going on about what it means to have been a warrior and what it means to have been tied to the old folks and the people. And it feels like that oral tradition standard and keeping narratives going is very much invested. Her story about the Taniwha, which I think is really, really cute that she writes these stories. And I looked it up. I didn't know anything about like the mythology here, but a Taniwha is basically like an oceanic guardian or monster. And I think that's a really pointed part of the movie, that duality as well. Like, can it be something brutal? Can it be something violent and malevolent? Or is there something generative and iterative in this family? And I think it's basically the choice between do we stay with Jake or don't we? Because if we look at him as someone who's representative of that duality, it's lost. You know, he is irredeemable. Ultimately, by the end.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think that Alan Duff, who wrote the original book, did end up writing two more books about the character of Jake. And there's a sequel. Yeah. Have you seen the sequel?
No.
And from what I can tell, it follows Jake. And I've heard it's a good movie, but I'm a little like, well, I don't know about spending more time with this guy. Yeah. I think the book's shut on him, right?
And if you try and do a redemption arc, you don't like it. I don't think he deserves it.
No. I think the power of the end of the movie is that it's like you are beyond the
realm. But I think the first book is written to follow Jake more so, right?
I think that's. I don't actually know.
I think my understanding of the initial book is that you actually do follow Jake from the get go.
Really?
And then I think that New Zealand film were like, we're not going to fund this because it's not marketable. We can't follow this guy.
Yeah.
And then the writer turned around and said, fuck it, we're going to follow Mum. Like, it's her journey. Wow.
Good choice. The person who adapted the book, Rewia Brown, and I'm not sure if I'm saying her first name properly, but it's Riwia. Yes, yes, and so it is this thing where I was curious. I was like, I know the director's a man. I know the book was written by a man. And yet there's such a feminine sort of perspective to this. Yes. And it does come through that she was like, I'm going to recalibrate this and I'm going to make Grace and Beth.
And it's such a good choice
to
do it.
It's a fucking excellent choice. You couldn't watch this movie. It was following.
It'd be like Raging Bull.
They end up in the third book, my understanding as well is that the kids grow up and they all become, you know, real estate or lawyers or something. Like, they all get, you know, into these professions and they basically turn their back on their heritage and they start like effectively destroying the community. Like, it's not a nice ending. It doesn't improve from here on in.
It feels like the whole To Kill a Mockingbird where Harper Lee wrote a second book and it was published after she died.
To Kill a Turkey.
Turns out Atticus is racist now. Everyone's like, oh, what? Look at that guy.
That's a shame.
No, the turkey's fine, Frank.
The turkey's okay. This film obviously does have the subtextual and actually quite blunt, like, colonization narrative to it as well, right? Like, it is about, you know, very representative of the cops who show up and take Boogie home when they arrest him. Yeah. Very much like the court proceedings, which feel like, I don't think the judge is unfair, but I think it's the system, obviously, that lets this happen. But the judge is like, I don't really know what else I can do in this situation, right? Your parents haven't shown up and your lawyer is telling me you should probably go into...
Yeah, your parents are unfit. Yeah. You've done some crimes. Or I guess you're in a welfare.
I think the point of the story is that the Western culture did bleed into New Zealand and it did destroy Māori culture for what it is. And so this is
the same here.
Again, the duality, you get traditional culture versus modern culture in this film, and Jake representing modern culture. The alcoholism that was brought through from Western culture and influence. And he is just so disconnected from his roots and it shows.
Mm.
And I think that's where a lot of his frustration stemmed from. There's that beautiful scene where they're sitting on the waterside and she talks about, you know, coming from, I don't know if she's necessarily royalty, but she comes from, like, in terms of the social class of her upbringing, I think that he coming and deriving from slaves, she not. She coming from a far more comfortable.
That's how I took it. Yeah, and obviously their relationship wasn't accepted by her family, so he's bitter.
He has resentment towards the white colonizers, and he has resentment towards what he sees as the more like haughty Māori people who look down on him. And it's a very complicated history, which I know very, very little about. But like, even without European colonization in New Zealand, there was a slave trade perpetuated by the Māoris on like a group of people who were in those islands, and it essentially constitutes a genocide. So it's like there's a whole host of stuff going on in the history there that we can't obviously get into, but Jake does represent the weird amalgamation of all that. And yet I don't think the movie excuses him. It doesn't go, well, you see...
Oh, he's so troubled.
All the history comes to this. I know that you've compared it to Raging Bull, but I still think that even though that's not a movie about a man I think deserves pity, it's a movie about a man who has more of a capacity to recognize the way in which his monstrosity is destroying others. And Jake... The final thing is him just yelling, well, fuck off, go. Like, I don't need
such
you.
A pathetic, like, yeah, such an awful ending for him as a character. So impotent, yeah. Like, just way to be a loser.
Yeah.
Just going back to your initial question as to sort of why I chose this film, I just wanted to bring this up on the pod because this film's important to me because at the time this film was introduced to me from my stepfather, Blakey, and he's a big influence on my entry into pop culture, whether it be music, film, TV, whatever. And I kid you not, I'm 13 years old, within a span of, I reckon, a year and a half, I watched the likes of, because of him, American Beauty, American History X, Chopper.
Jesus.
Once Were Warriors.
Young Guns.
Young Guns.
But I watched Young Guns with you guys.
Yeah. My point is he really, at that point, sort of broke my world in the best way possible because all of a sudden I was seeing film for the first time for its heavier tones and for
at 13.
Yeah, I mean it's around the time where you discover what I mean. You're hitting high school. You've got South Park on SBS. You've got all this shit, like you're oversaturated with, and all of a sudden your world opens up and you're like, fuck, I can say fuck.
See, my childhood is very different.
Of course, but you've got to understand that you're the exception.
I don't think so. I think a nice, close, religious household is
good. This gave me a deeper understanding of emotionality behind film and you know, whether I could understand it fully. I started to process and understand that there was more to film and there was like, shit, this is real narrative. This is real storytelling. And that's when... And again, that broke my world open. I was like, I want to be an actor because I feel I can empathize. I can feel I'm feeling something. I don't know how to describe it or talk about it.
It affected you.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
And you trickled that down to me because not that I saw all of those through you, but I definitely saw movies like American Beauty, like Fight Club.
Full Metal Jacket.
No, Full Metal Jacket I didn't watch through you, weirdly. I watched.
Okay, great. That's good to know.
But I watched California through you. Okay, I'm just saying. Marcus and I have California. I'm sorry that we're not talking about you at the moment, right?
Be less specific. Just like wrap it up.
I apologize.
Natural Born Killers was in this.
Born Killers. Quentin, you got to remember, at 14, kids were watching Freddy Got Fingered. Like, that was not an unusual thing for people to just quote openly at school.
Yeah, I remember hearing Daddy Wants Some Sausage, and I was like, it must be barbecue day.
The backwards man to the backwards man.
There must have been some quotes you heard that you had less ability to write. Like, he fingers Freddy in his butthole. You must have been like, well, I don't really know how to square that one.
Kids in my school didn't quote that.
No, that would have been weird, I suppose. Yeah.
God is great. God is good. And he thanks us for his food.
He thanks us
for his food? Yeah, we provide.
Yeah. Should we talk about Grace's journey?
We should cut that.
Yeah.
No, because you sounded great. God, it's great.
Grace. Is that what you want to talk about?
Okay, yeah, let's go from God is great to talking about Grace.
So fucking Uncle Bully, right? Uncle fucking Bully.
Curtis looking like a snack and just really exploiting how...
This is not how I want to describe
him. Well, he's so good looking and I was just like, I think he's...
He's a seven.
Comparatively,
I think he's pulling off the sleaze in a way that's very difficult to somehow make alluring. And he kind of looks like a respectable porn star, like essentially.
He's kind of like Austin Butler in The Bike Riders, you know what I mean? He's like, sure. That good looking bikey.
Although Austin Butler's almost like synthetic. Good looking in that movie. Well, like, it's kind of creepy, but I know what you mean. People. This guy's a bit more grotty. But yes, he's doing that. And then Uncle Bully is a rapist.
Just awful.
The worst, because Grace...
Poor Cliff Curtis, I really feel for him here because he did not want this role. He read the script. He rejected it.
Role.
He rejected it. And then his auntie and his agent said, no, no, you're doing it. And he's like, okay, I'm doing it. I mean, and what happens? He does it. It's great. He does the role very well.
He's had a wonderful career.
Now he can't escape it.
I don't think that's true. I think he's not been typecast as dirty criminal rapist.
Let me fix that. I think in terms of career, fine. He's fine. Mm. I think in terms of fan interaction, I think he has a lot of problems with this.
Really?
He's constantly resurfaces.
People are just mad at him?
Constantly. Like, people cannot disassociate him from this film purely because of the content.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's so upsetting how you see it coming. So they're having one of their drunken parties, right, and Grace comes down just to get a glass of water.
Give your uncle a kiss.
Oh, it's so disgusting. And you just see that look in his eye. And you know what's about to happen and you're like, please no. Like, why is this happening? She's 13.
There was a slightly redeeming moment there where Jake is even like, what are you doing down here? Go to bed. You don't belong here now.
Oh, I didn't find, no, because he doesn't, he say, she goes, where's mum? And he goes, she's in bed where you should be. And it's like, oh, okay, sorry, man. I didn't find that redeeming.
I found that more of a fatherly tone as to get to bed. He's still drunk. He's still an asshole. He's still awful. But I think at that point he was trying to get out of there. Get out of there. Yeah. This is not the place for you now. It's all us guys. Your mum's not here. Mm. Go away. And she does, but it's, you know, too little too late at that point.
Yeah, bully follows her upstairs. And that scene when he gets upstairs is so drawn out. Like, it's very brave for the film to give it such screen time.
There's no doubt it's the most horrifying scene we've watched as a pod. There is nothing we've watched even close to it.
Because I watched it today, right? And Tom, I knew you had message in the group, but that was the first one where I went, oh, well, this is why he's sent this message of, oh boy.
Up to that point, I was this is pretty dark. And then once he goes into the room and it looks like he's going to try rape her, I was like, I have been trained by movies for years. Someone's going to come in and stop him. Yeah. Last second, Jake's going to burst in the door and pull him off. And he doesn't. And the camera's just like, you're in this with us. And like, this is happening. Yeah. And it just doesn't let up.
It's so claustrophobic. Mm. It's so close in.
It's horrifying.
And she is like, what a performance. Oh, it's really upsetting.
I have to say, I'm someone who's always a little bit like, I do subscribe to the notion that child actors maybe shouldn't be a thing. Like, it's such a, in any circumstance, in the best cases, I'm a little bit like, I'm so fucking devastated that she had to act that scene.
Yeah.
I really find that quite.
That's going
upsetting.
Through my mind 100%.
Yes.
She's such a young. But it's so interesting now. It's like when they do kids in adults films now, they'll get reaction shots from the kids of, oh, shock, or they said something funny. And then the kid will go home. Yeah. And then the adult will do their variations on swearing or all these like things that are too adult for the kid to see. And it's like,
yeah.
Where's the line? Like, they can't hear swearing, but they can do a scene like this. But
there's no intimacy coordinators back in the 90s.
Like, no,
small budget New Zealand film.
This is a very different scenario, and I don't think that anyone would. I'd be very surprised if anyone could get away with shooting a scene like this.
It's not only that. I then find, and it's really, this is going to sound so random, but I a couple of weeks ago watched a movie called Wake and Fright at the cinemas, which is a 1971 Australian film, which is absolutely batshit and this crazy cult movie. And it's about like a guy going to a random town in like Box Hill essentially, and he just has a drunken weekend there, and one scene near the end of the movie is them shooting kangaroos, and it's a real kangaroo hunt. You see kangaroos get shot on screen.
Wow. Did you tell me about this?
Have told you about it after I watched it. It was a few weeks
ago.
No,
you did. You did tell me about this. I
watching this scene and I'm like, this is effective. This is communicating exactly what it's meant to about like the masculine toxicity that leads to such violence and mayhem. But did they have to shoot so many kangaroos? And not only this scene with Grace where she is raped by Cliff Curtis, then the bath scene where it's clearly her and she is like naked in the bath and you don't see quote unquote anything. But even that, I'm like, really don't think we had to do this.
To be on set that day and be like, all right, take your clothes off in the bath, that's heavy. And she's doing such heavy material.
It communicates it. I feel exactly what the filmmaker wanted. I don't know if it was necessary.
She was 15, 16 at the time of filming. So
she's a little older than the character.
But that's still very
young. I think the most upsetting thing about that scene, more than her even in the bath, even though there is a scene where she sits up and she starts trying to like scrub away at herself and she's in so much pain. But when she gets out of the bath and she's scrubbing at her shirt and scrubbing at the sheets and Reno Owen comes in and says, oh, baby, got your period. And she thinks it's this big moment where she's become a woman. And just that division between what has actually happened.
Isn't it? She's celebrating her daughter in this moment where she's
like, oh, you must have a lot of feelings.
Effectively the darkest place she could ever be.
You can make a list of the 10 most upsetting things in any every movie, and this is on that list. It is so
look, I apologize. All right.
Yeah.
I did think this was important. I think this is it's so significant. I mean, sorry, my thoughts are going everywhere here. I really thought it was important for you guys to see this.
It's an excellent film. I'm so glad I watched it.
It's important for a multitude of reasons, but like this put New Zealand on the map as well. And if you look at it that way, without that, we wouldn't be getting a lot of the films we've got now. I mean, effectively,
Thor Ragnarok.
If this hadn't gone international the way it did, we may never have gotten the Lord of the Rings in New Zealand.
This is true. That's a really good point. Like,
it paved the way for cultural topics, for social topics, for everything that it discusses.
And for New Zealand as a creative hub. Yeah. Like, there's so much talent that comes out of that country.
And the cultural interest. You get movies like The Whale Rider after this. You get movies like Boy after this, which I think are really fantastic. There was a vote by the New Zealand public, maybe in the last 10 years, for the best New Zealand films, and the three are Once Were Warriors, Boy, Whale Rider. Yeah. And I think that's a pretty fucking solid list for any country.
Lord
of the Rings, I don't think they count it as a, like,
New Zealand film.
And you're right, it was filmed in New Zealand, but it would be arguable to watch that film and go, the culture of New Zealand.
Yes, yes, yes.
if that's
the point of the list,
yes, I think it's like culturally Kiwi movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love Boy. I don't know if you guys have seen Boy. I know that's
Tiger,
That's Tiger. Tiger, yeah, and I find Tiger, along with most of the internet, very frustrating these days. But Boy is great.
He plays a detestable uncle in that.
And no, Dad.
He's the dad.
He's like an absent father.
I'm your dad. Yeah,
that's right.
It's kind of like not even the funny version of this, but you know what I mean? It's like, but it's playing
on the father. Boy is funny, definitely.
Yeah, kind of the lighter version for sure. He's not a Jake the Mouse. But
no,
but he's an absent father. He's a shit father.
And then Whale Rider, again, is dealing with parental figures and... Well, Keisha Castle Hughes rides off on the whale, doesn't she?
Oh, well, then
she?
Where's
then
the
whale
dad?
Brings her back?
No, I don't know. I've not seen
You've not seen it?
I'm just trying to bring some light.
The Whale Rider is a very good movie.
I should watch it.
It's great. The Haka. Can we talk about The Haka?
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. Please talk about The Haka.
There's just such a power to it. Like, any time you're watching any, like, celebration, anything to do with the ceremony of it, and that we get two different versions of sort of like Māori musical and communal sort of activity. Mm. And it comes in the haka in that scene, which is brilliant when he's at the welfare home, all the boys together in that shot going along showing them all.
But I mean, that's incredible. But then when he gets off the phone from his mum and then he does it solo and he's just like screaming at the sky doing the haka.
Always
he's,
effective.
His character arc's very really nice.
Boogies is great because he disappears for so much of the movie.
Tuangaroa Emile.
Right.
Close.
As Boogie.
He's good. He's really good.
He's really good. When he's singing at Grace's funeral at the end, maybe we'll come back to that. We should say Grace suffers this terrible attack and she goes to Toot in one of the most heartbreaking scenes in a movie littered with heartbreaking scenes.
Yeah.
And she smokes weed with him and he kisses her on the lips. And there is so much that's tragic about that scene before you even get to the funeral and the moment that, like, I actually paused the movie.
In a similar instance to when her mum comes into the bathroom, you've had the same sort of...
It could be a different thing.
Misguided sort of approach.
That could be the sweetest moment between two people, whether it's
And he believes it to be. Like, they're best friends, have been friends for years,
and
friends
in any
forever.
Other circumstance, it would have been probably perfect.
That really could have been a lovely thing, and because of what's happened to her, she says, fuck you, you're just like all the rest of them. She goes home, and Uncle Bully asks for a kiss, and she says no, and Jake...
tells her to fuck off.
And rips her storybook apart. And she goes out the back and you see a shot of the tree with the rope. And I was like, no. why?
But had you learnt by this point that...
Nothing was... Yeah. That's it. I was like, no nothing one's, one's going to stop the worst things from happening. And even when Beth gets home and there's the close-up on Rena Owen seeing her daughter, her like just earth-shattering cries... I still think maybe Grace is alive for the next 5 minutes, which was the most devastating part of it for me, because she said to Jake at the hospital, she says, don't cry, it won't do any good. But I thought, well, maybe she's just in a coma. And then when she says to Jake, I'm going to take Grace home, I was like, so she's not well, but you're going to take her home. Yeah. And then cut to the next scene and they're carrying a coffin. And I just fucking fell apart. Yeah. I was just so upset.
That moment when Beth goes and grabs her and they cut the body down.
I don't think there's ever been a more alive
moment on film.
I would agree that that's the most powerful scene in the entire film.
Comparable to, I mean, just Sean Penn in Mystic River. Is that my daughter in there?
I think this is better.
Absolutely. Yeah. But like that kind of feeling of just pure fear and rage and passion and devastation. Yeah. It's...
I don't know if I like Sean Penn in that movie. Sorry, I know that's such a tangent.
It's fine.
But anyway.
It's just the one that came to mind. I'm sorry.
I know what you mean. I think that's a good comparison.
It's funny because it's parodied online a bit. When I first watched it, I was like, that's horrifying.
I think I had the same reaction. When I was younger, I was like, that is just like crazy acting. And years later, I was like, that is crazy acting. Yeah. Like the inflection changed a little. Grace dies.
But Jake is standing there watching, shell-shocked, doing nothing. His friend shakes him. He still does nothing. Mm-hmm. You're like, what are you feeling at that moment? Like, let us in, you know? Like, but he can't handle it because obviously he feels guilty.
I think the only time that Jake really feels is when he's hammered drunk. Like, truly. I think that he's only ever really in connection with his feelings and acts out on them incorrectly is when he's hammered drunk.
Can't access them when he's sober.
Not at all.
Yeah,
and they're there. You can see it. And I think this is a really good moment for him too because he locks up, he freezes, and you can see the cogs turning on the inside. But he doesn't know how to express it. That's it.
He has the capacity to like mimic a good father and a husband, or at least a convivial one.
Yeah, yeah.
When he has something to give them. So with the opening when he brings in the seafood and then when they go on the drive and he's rented the car. Yeah. And he's like, well, I'm king shit today. I've got the money and I can be dad. Them singing What's the Time, Mr. Wolf, which is a great song, which I'd never heard before. So good. And you're just like, what's next? Like, it's the Bill Haley thing. It's just like, they've got 12 to work with, baby. They're going through
them all. Keep singing it. Go around the clock.
But his singing's great. And
the beauty of that, the Maori culture of them singing, and they're singing at the parties, and everyone, I mean, you don't hear it, but everyone has beautiful voices, and it's that sort of like, look at the community in unison. And
there's harmonies. No one's bashful. No one's...
they just go, let's sing.
No one's reserved.
Yeah!
Beth, you should sing. And she's like, oh, go on, all right.
Scooby-Dooby-Dance.
Don't make me sing.
Don't make me dance. It's very...
you come in right there.
It's a joyous film in times where it's not the most upsetting and sort of like grueling film you've seen. It's crazy how the weirdest thing that I thought was really compelling and an interesting choice is the opening credits are like,
I think they're fucking amazing.
They're and they're almost graphic novel-esque, so but kind of like grindhousey. This feels like a really edgy way to open this movie.
Is the song playing over that sort of a New Zealand rap almost?
Yeah, it may be. I can't quite remember.
The soundtrack to this is really good.
Soundtrack is awesome. Really
but even great. The end credits, when it's like the movie finishes, it's like, end.
Yeah.
Full letters of the whole screen. It's like, wow.
And we're out. Mm. It's so cool.
It's bold filmmaking. It's really stylishly done
and beautifully
and heartfelt.
Yes.
And I think back to the shock factor that we were talking about earlier, I think that this is obviously very intentional, and I think they just went, it's all or nothing on this, guys. We are going to give everything that we have to say on screen. We're not going to pull back.
Nah.
Take it or leave it. And I think that is the most important thing about this film is that it doesn't shy away from the conversation and the topics. And
not in any way.
It's not for everyone. No. And I can see how there's a lot of people who are like, I will not accept that this is in film format. How dare you?
Yeah.
Which means it's working. It means that it's opening up a conversation at a deeper level where people don't want to discuss the harder conversations.
This is the best movie I've seen in a long time that I don't recommend.
Yeah.
Like if you're listening to this, maybe not. Like you might
I said I'm sorry.
But like it's a great conversation I think we've had about it. It is really
It's not a fun film. It's not like but I think there's value in watching it. There's value in going through and experiencing that with them.
It's a cult classic. I think it's important for people to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean that.
And it walks a fine line constantly between trying to identify the aspects of there's so much association by Western culture and European culture that dates back obviously centuries, but even now that kind of happens with like savagery associated with Polynesians, Islanders, Indigenous Australians, what have you. And the idea is that this film engages with what a warrior can be in a way that is completely separate from the necessity of violence and the necessity
being
of...
Being a warrior doesn't mean you're violent.
No. Like, yeah. You, the ending part, we still should talk about Grace's funeral, but because we're here, Beth walks out of the bar and the Master Jake comes after her and she says to him, "Our people once were warriors." And it's one of the best examples ever of a movie using its title. And I punched the fucking air. Like, I was so excited she said that.
Because you don't, like you said at the start, the title is vague to what are you coming in for? And when she says it, you're like, oh, yes, you were. Yes, you were.
Grammatically, too, it's very interesting. Like, once were warriors.
It could just be called warriors. And it's so interesting, that the choice was obviously it's alliterative, the once were warriors, which gives it that pop. But it is really, really great the connection to the past.
Yeah.
And she says, "Our people once were warriors, but not like you. They had mana. They had spirit. Mm. And I've survived you for 18 years, I can survive anything. Maybe you taught me that." And I started applauding.
I mean,
in my
it's
house.
Such a stunning line. Stunning line.
What a fucking incredible.
With a line that, with a movie that's full of the dialogue is sometimes estranged, sometimes wooden, sometimes weird. That is remarkable screenwriting.
It's great writing.
Remarkable.
Incredible writing.
Wonderful stuff. And you are so joyful that they're just getting away from. And then he just screams at her like, "You'll fucking come back. Yeah. You want me. You can't fucking be anything without me." And he's just screaming like an absolute loser.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding.
He's got
like,
nothing.
Why didn't that happen in Raging Bull?
I wrote down my favorite line in the film, which, I mean, that is so good. But this line I wrote down straight away, it's the "Notice how you never see black in a rainbow." Do you remember that line?
Oh, yeah, with Toot, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're talking about the pot at the end.
Yeah. I love that line. I thought it's like just so representative of what this film's trying to convey.
Yeah.
And again, going back on that sort of Western culture sort of rolling through and changing. And I think it's, I don't know whether to say destroying their culture, but definitely shifting it. It's just so important. So
absolutely. Mm. I think the movie is about the way that, again, as we've said, without excusing it, that Jake has become a man who is at a crossroads, or he's like at a point where he has no sense of belonging as someone as part of the colonized New Zealand and as a Maori warrior. Mm. So he resorts to anger and the frustration of being thought of as a slave by the Maori and being thought of as just like, you know, as just a brown guy or a black guy by the white invaders. Mm. I think one of the most devastating lines in the movie is the scene where Jake gives Beth the money and he says, "Come on, come sit on my lap like you love me." And she does, and she says, "That's the problem, Jake, I do." Mm. And I was like,
the whole thing.
I think I liked this more. The more I'm talking about it, I'm like, I think this is more. I'm throwing in my own power up higher as I'm talking about it. I can't believe how
good in the power.
This movie is.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
We've still got more to cover.
Should we do MVP?
Before we do MVP, quickly, we haven't talked about Grace's funeral.
Okay.
They have the funeral. She takes Beth takes her back to the traditional burial ritual,
mm-hmm.
and everyone has something. Whether it's Beth talking about how she kept a promise to not return home, but she's so sorry that she kept that promise, right?
Yeah.
She thinks if she hadn't kept it, she would have got them home. When Boogie starts singing, and so everything he's learned, and you think. The foreshadowing of the movie would be, well, he's going to do the haka at some point.
Yeah.
But no, it's this beautiful, mournful singing. And Toot leans over and kisses her and he says, "That's all I meant, Grace. Best friends."
Oh, that's the line. That's
I actually
the
just
line.
Need to
oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's all I meant.
That is the
And then Boogie,
line
Boogie
of the
goes,
movie.
"She loved you, man." And you're like, yeah, she did. Like, they were best friends. And they used to just hang out every night in his car
and they
under
had, like,
the bridge.
They had three scenes together and I felt all of that.
Yeah.
It's
even though
so
we said he was one
well
of the weaker actors in the film, it doesn't matter. It just it just carries.
I agree.
The line, my favorite line is, "Let's say Grace."
Yeah.
Grace.
That is so funny.
The kid says Grace. Beautiful.
So fair.
All right, MVP.
MVP.
MVP. I mean, I don't think it's difficult. I think we're probably all on the same page, but.
Say it in unison. 1, 2, 3.
Rita Owen.
Yep. She's so good. Oh my God.
You know what I
She's so lovely.
Didn't do? And I should have done this because it sounds like the sort of thing I would have done, which is look up the best actress nominees for this year at the Academy Awards. And see, because, like, I would struggle to think, I can't imagine there's another performance from this year that if I'd been alive, I would have been like, oh, that performance was, I think this is just one of the best performances I've ever seen.
So this has been the 1995 Oscars, right?
Well, that's no, came out in 94? Yeah, yes, the films in 94.
Susan Sarandon for The Client, Jessica Lange for Blue Sky, Jodie Foster for Neil, Winona Ryder for Little Women, lol, and Miranda Richardson for Tom and Viv.
Jessica Lange wins, and I think it's Jodie Foster for Nell.
Neil Armstrong.
Oh. Why was she not nominated in this?
I'm just sat like
this category.
I have seen two of those movies, and I haven't seen most of them. Nell apparently is very weird.
I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but that's five white women.
I mean, like, it's the Oscars of the 90s.
That's also five films you just said that I have not seen.
You've seen Little Women, right?
The original.
Winona.
Yeah, Winona. Oh, that's your favorite Little Women.
No. I have.
This is your joke.
No, I know. It was my joke. Sorry. I barely remember it. It was a joke.
It was so long
ago. It was ages ago. It was months ago.
No, I but would, for real though.
Rena Owen should have won every award ever. She should have won Best of the 90s. Yeah. Like, she's just so good in this movie.
It's truly remarkable. It's a harsh criticism to say this film falls flat without her, but I think it wouldn't have landed the way it has, I think, without her performance.
Oh, yeah. There's no movie without.
I think the two of them at the top.
He's incredible.
They're
as well,
leading from the front, like it is such such a strong sort of the parent.
The reason why I didn't give this like a 10 or higher is from a filmmaking perspective, and again, it is with a 90s lens. There's some issues, you know. You look at the choreography of some of the fights and things like that.
Yeah.
Pulling their punches. I am convinced, and I'd love to look this up too, if that probably didn't even use stunties. It feels pretty much like they've just thrown the actors in here.
Yeah, just try not to hit each other. You'll be right.
Basically.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like. You can tell because there's a lack of technique again to a lot of the fights and the combat, to just the movement. Some of the performances, I don't know, we've touched on, seem a bit wooden. Some are not. It's not a perfect film.
But I don't think so.
It's very well made, but it's
dated. You know, when you watch a film, you're like, it feels dated. But yeah, I'm buying
but also set in time. Like it's sort of like a time capsule. It's $950,000 is the budget.
That's it.
Not even a million.
Made 6.7, which I think made it the most in New Zealand exclusively. It might probably made a little bit more overseas, which made it the highest grossing film in New Zealand, just like for that country, till Boy, I think. So it was like 16 years
until
another film came along and actually just made that much. Cool Boy.
I just want to also, it's shot in 34 days.
Yeah.
That's so fast.
Unheard of.
Incredible. And that's why, like, maybe some of the fights, they're like, we don't have time. Move on. Like, they were just parent. But to get those performances in 34 days.
Especially considering a lot of this is night shooting. Yeah. So you are really, and apparently the neighborhood they filmed it in, they kept getting complaints.
Really?
Which you would just be like.
The neighbors.
You surely murdering someone over there.
Surely word up the neighbours.
Yes.
Some of the bar scenes I think was, I guess, my grievance. Like gun to head if I had to pick a problem with the film. I don't like the open setting of the bar and coming back to that. It felt very staged. It felt very like...
When everything else feels like we just shot at this guy's house, like everything's in a real location. I see your point.
In a way, and you know, the karaoke singer and all that sort of stuff. And some of it felt a bit campy and a bit like...
Yeah,
that I think that's where the dated sort of filming to me didn't quite land.
I don't disagree with that. I think there's a sort of like there's a charm to that on some level, but yes, there are aspects of it. Even just certain lines. If we're really going to talk about like performances that for a second took me out of it, the two cops, which is such a small thing, they're not very good. Like the two cops are pretty boogie home. No,
I didn't mind it.
I just because they just feel so like. They're holding up cue cards behind.
Yeah, they felt like they're off the set of Mad Max 1.
Sure.
I felt like they felt like they're off the set of
Blue Heelers.
Hey, I'm a cracker, like white boy. Like square white men.
That's my favorite TV
Wait
show.
Wait a second.
Cracker White Boy, season 2.
How do I say this? Yeah, I'm a cracker white boy is what you went
You know what I mean though? Hey, way to make the white
was
people.
Was he just racist towards
nerdy.
White people?
Yeah.
I don't know what
he
that
got
was.
There somehow.
I'll take it.
That's
sorry.
So funny.
We want to quickly talk about this is Lee Tamahori's first actual feature
film. Do we go Butler's Pantry for this?
Okay, because well, we don't have time for
Lee
much.
Lee
so let's
Tamahori.
Go.
In the pantry.
Country with a Mike.
You can't go.
Version.
Oh, sorry. Butler's Pantry. I was going to say, you can't go Butler's Pantry until I've pressed the button.
I apologize. One of us should have said choice during the break there.
Were you going to fit that whole sentence in there, by the way? Were you going to fit that whole sentence in that little break?
Yeah, okay. I was like, I can do it.
You can't do the whole button.
You got to do the vote for the button.
Yeah. When was the last time you guys heard choice used this much?
That's choice,
it's
bro.
It's so choice, good bro. How much they choice. When choice. She, said, when she said, it was real impressive.
Yeah.
What's impressive?
Choice.
There are sweet moments in this movie. Yeah. Yes, the director of this film, he went on to make Along Came Spider, which is the Alex Cross movie, but he also directed Die Another Day, which I had no idea. It's such a strange...
Really?
Yeah, he directed the last Pierce Brosnan and the best Pierce Brosnan movie.
Which Pierce Brosnan
no
movie?
One pushing, no one pushing back on that.
Well, there's hold on, don't forget Mamma Mia. When you're gone.
That's a whole different topic.
Also, XXX The Next Level.
Yes.
And a couple of episodes.
He did even the first XXX.
Yeah, no, not even the worst one.
He directed an episode of The Sopranos, which I think is fascinating. Really? He directed season 2, episode 3, Toodle Fucking Who, which you might
That's the greatest episode. That's where Paulie does the drugs. And he says, "Toodle fucker doo."
Do you remember?
My God, he's right.
Do you remember? You've seen the whole thing at this point.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Don't turn your back on me. I've seen it.
Do you remember the scene where Melfi, the therapist, sees Tony with his friends in public?
Yes.
And and she goes,
"Yeah, the dinner."
Toodle. Yes. And then it cuts to her therapy scene, and she's like,
"And then she goes, why did I say that?" She's talking to her therapist. It's like, whoa, way to flip the narrative. It's so good. I love The Sopranos.
Forget about it.
Okay, is anyone going to throw anything? And Tony, you've already thrown in your own
blood
power.
Pressure.
Oh, who cares about your blood pressure, you
old
fuck?
Did you finish the pantry? Are we out?
Yeah, I hope so. We have to be. Is anyone throwing anything in?
Tom, I want you to go first.
Yeah, I'm going to go up to a 9.7.
Yeah.
Every time I mentioned a part of this movie I loved, I was like, and I mentioned her monologue at the end, I was like giving myself like a feeling like I was levitating.
Yeah, you're a really good actor. That's
thanks,
true.
Man. Appreciate
Marcus?
That.
Marcus?
This film's a 10.
We are.
Hey. Oh.
Did impressive.
Awesome.
I wanted to gauge the room on the feeling, the general feeling here.
Yeah, because we were
you guys have
upset.
Reinvigorated my love for this. I felt bad giving it a higher score because I thought I was going to get torn to shreds.
No. I think it's so upsetting, but in such a beautiful, caring kind of way.
It's a similar thing. I remember you coming in with The Exorcist and I was really surprised at you being like, this is a good movie. Like it's
I pee-pee my pants, but...
but I pee-pee my heart as well.
I was going to say, it kept me warm, but that's fine. I'm throwing it as well. I'm going up to a 7.5. Threw in the pants. Maybe even an 8.
Oh,
you know what I mean? That's good.
Real
quick, historically, I don't think we've ever, all three of us, gone up in an episode before.
It's first time. I've gone up lots of times.
An octave, maybe.
I'm going to throw it up. I'm not really warmed up.
Can you sing What's the Time, Mr. Wolf, for us?
What's the time, Mr. Wolf?
What's the time?
turn your mic down. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Once Were Warriors. I'm Frank.
I'm Marcus.
I'm Tom.
See you next week. And we'll do the credits in a second.
Welcome to the credits. My name is Marcus.
My name's Tom.
I don't know what we're doing anymore.
Those were the credits.
Send us a message, DM, Instagram, email, throwinthepowl@gmail.com. Was that right?
That's correct.
You got it.
Send us some pics.
You remember the name of the title and @gmail.com. Yeah. Bye. Love you.